The matter of the Plastic Surgery Center versus Maloof Chevrolet Cadillac Incorporated. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
May it please the court, I'm David Kendall from the law office of Camden Bellis here on behalf of the petitioners Maloof Chevrolet and Leonie Amos.
May it please the court, Florence Yoram on behalf of the petitioners and Susan Stryker from the law firm of Bressler, Avery and Ross on behalf of the Amicus Curiae Insurance Council of New Jersey.
May it please the court, Michael DeSico from the law firm of Madge McDermott and DeSico for the respondents, the Plastic Surgery Center, the Lewis, Dr. Paragiudakis, and Dr. Mendes.
Good morning. Steve Sapnow, the Cell and Title Sapnow Law Service on behalf of RWJ Margaret's Health, practice at Murray Health, Valley Hospital and Atlantic Care, where we're securing the case.
Good morning. Michael Swike from Calgary Law on behalf of Amicus Medical Society of New Jersey.
Welcome, counsel. We are blessed with an abundance of help for this case. I'm going to encourage you to adopt arguments that you've heard before rather than repeat to the extent that makes sense this morning. Mr. Kendall, please go ahead.
May it please the court, with the court's permission, if I may reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal in the event any rebuttal is necessary.
We'll have you back, perhaps for a little less than that. Please go ahead.
Very well. Thank you, John. We're here today, Your Honor, Your Honors, because the appellate division erred in reversing Judge Martino's carefully reasoned and clearly articulated decision in which he found that a 2-year statute of limitations applied to medical provider claims filed in the Division of Workers' Compensation. The appellate division erred by equating medical provider claims with contract claims. They are not. The appellate division erred by expanding the jurisdiction of the Division of Workers' Compensation to 6 years. The appellate division erred by concluding that the claimants in the division are understood to be injured workers. That's simply not the case. And the appellate division erred by failing to afford Judge Martino the deference to which his decision should have been entitled as the judge with the expertise charged with administering the provisions of the workers' compensation law. As a result, filings in the Division of Workers' Compensation of medical provider claims have increased in the past year plus since the decision. Right now, 22% of all of the claims, of all of the new claims in the division, are medical provider claims. This is the Division of Workers' Compensation that is slowly being overrun by these filings of medical provider claims, and by expanding the jurisdiction to 6 years. I personally have answered claim petitions that date back 4 or 5 years for dates of service that would otherwise be barred by a 2-year statute of limitations. To understand the significance of the errors in the appellate division decision in this case, the nature of the medical provider claims has to be clearly understood. When an injured worker receives treatment, there is no question a contract formed between the injured worker and the medical provider. They go in, they fill out the paperwork, we've all done it. We sign our names, we agree to be responsible for the payment of whatever the charges are. However, if the injury is a work-related injury, the legislative amendment to Section 15 in 2012 extinguishes that contract. Why? Because the employer is responsible for providing treatment for workers' compensation injuries. Any work-related injury, the petitioner does not have to pay for. The treatment is all the responsibility of the employer. So the contract is extinguished. Now, if the injuries are not work-related, the contract does remain. But the nature of the injuries and the nature of the circumstances when the treatment is provided determines what kind of claim can be pursued.
How is a physician to know whether the injury is work-related? He's not there. He wasn't at the accident scene.
That's true, but when an injured worker, when an injured person...
Because you're saying once a contract, once not a contract, someone with an injury comes to a doctor, maybe he checks off it's work-related, maybe he doesn't check that it's work-related. How is the physician supposed to make a determination that this is a viable work-related injury that is compensable under the workers' comp regime?
During the course of the treatment, the doctors ordinarily take a history. whatever the circumstances of the accident may be, if the person says, I was at work and fell off a scaffolding or tripped over a rock or whatever the instance is, that history is in the doctor's records. If it's not in the doctor's notes himself, his intake staff, the nursing staff, the information is available to the doctor. In addition, during the course of treatment, if there's more than one treatment provided, if there's visits on December 1st, December 12th, December 15th, somewhere along the line, the nature of the claim has to become clear to the doctor's office.
Okay, so let me, I'm asking you this question because I want to understand, you're an expert, I'm trying to understand how this works.
Right.
So the doc, let's say there's no workers' comp action filed by the worker. The medical provider now files his petition in the workers' comp court.
Correct.
And the employer says this wasn't a work-related injury. Is the physician required to now prove that this was a work-related injury?
Yes.
When the physician is a complete stranger to the incident?
Yes.
That's a crazy situation, no?
I don't think that it is, because if it's a work-related injury and the doctor knows it and the petitioner hasn't filed the claim, the doctor still has the right
How's the physician supposed to prove it?
Well, the Division of Workers' Compensation has subpoena power.
You're telling me the physician now, merely in order to get payment on what initially was a contract between him and the worker, is now in the Workers' Comp Division and now it's upon him to prove that this was a work-related injury, has to call the worker and other witnesses to prove it?
The simple answer is yes, but let me take a step back from the premise of your question. Because what happens is, if an injured worker is going to file a claim petition, the doctor usually knows about it because of the history. But in these medical provider claims in general, the claims almost always, I shouldn't say almost always, but in a vast majority of the cases, there's been a payment made. And the dispute in the division is about the amount of the payment that has already been made. A lot of these medical provider claims are insisting that they are entitled to more money than they've already been paid. So in practice, they already know it's a work-related injury. They already know they provided treatment. They already know they've been provided payment for this treatment.
What's your response to the appellate division's concern that there will be claims that expire before they accrue under a two-year statute?
That goes to one of the errors in the appellate division's decision. The appellate division, from somewhere, came up with the idea that we were arguing that the date of accident is when a medical provider claim accrues. We never made that argument in the appellate division. We didn't make it at the trial level. And most importantly, Judge Martino didn't make that finding in his decision.
So how do you read Section 51 of the statute? Suppose there's a case where there's no settlement and no partial payment. Under the terms of the statute, when does the medical service provider have to file the claim?
The medical service provider has to file the claim from the date that the service is provided.
Would that mean there would be numerous statute of limitation periods? 2 years for this service today, the employee comes back 2 weeks from now, so that service is 2 years from now, so there would be multiple limitation periods?
Well, there would be multiple claims, so yes, there would be multiple limitation periods. Just like an injured worker who falls on January 1st, falls again on January 5th, and falls again on January 10th, he can file three claim petitions.
Yeah, but you're talking separate incidents. I'm talking this is separate, it's different treatments.
Well,
same injury, several treatments, as usually happens. Does that mean that there's a two-year statute as to the first treatment for that day? Begins to run, then for the next treatment a week from now, there's another two-year statute, so it's a week later, so there could be multiple hundreds of limitation periods.
I'm hopeful it doesn't get to hundreds of periods of treatment,
well,
but yes.
Some injuries take a long time to treat.
I want to go back to to follow up on Justice Patterson's question. I'm looking at the statute, and tell me if I'm misreading it or misunderstanding it. Its plain terms suggest that you get 2 years where there has been an agreement for compensation that's been broken, or 2 years from the last payment where there's been partial payment. But then the statute says within 2 years after the date of the accident, otherwise. No?
That's exactly what the statute says, and I'm not going to dispute you on that, Judge, because you're reading it perfectly.
So how does that work in the case of a physician who's providing medical treatment for an injury that occurred 2.5 years ago?
The legislature did not conduct a class in master drafting of legislation when they amended Section 15. I concede that. There is not a specific provision that says date of service. But that's why we go back to Judge Martino's decision, because Judge Martino did a very carefully reasoned analysis of how the statute should apply because of the time periods, because of what you just read. There is a concern that it doesn't specifically say date of service. So what Judge Martino did was equate the date of the loss that the medical provider would have, which is the date of service, with the date of loss that the injured worker would have.
So that's very nice what he did, but the question is whether or not it actually follows from the statute. So the one thing that is clear, 14-1 has a 6-year statute of limitations for all contract claims. That includes contracts between a physician and a patient. What is less than clear, unless you can show me the clarity, is the clarity in 15-15 and 15-51, the clarity that there is a 2-year statute of limitations now on those claims that are work-related. Where is the clarity?
There isn't clarity. I concede that there's not clarity. This is not, as I said, a master.
So in the lack of clarity, when there's one statute which is unquestionably clear and another statute that is not so, why would we upend the clear statute for something that is ambiguous?
Because the contract statute of limitations applies to contracts. These are not contracts because the medical providers are not trying to enforce a contract against the petitioner.
Yet the medical providers say some of this is contract. They're PPO arrangements, they're a variety of arrangements.
I'm sorry, Joe.
Oh, no. What's your response to that?
Those claims, let me take a step back. Yes, there are PPO arrangements, there are network providers, however you want to describe it. Yes, there are contracts out there between insurance carriers and medical providers. But those are not the claims that are the subject of the medical provider claims in the division. There are claims that arise under these agreements, and usually those are based on coding disputes where the medical provider says you should have paid me $3,000, you only paid me $2,000, and then there's a comparison of the codes, but that's all under the contract. But those claims do come up in the Division of Workers' Compensation, as they should. But those are for specific dates of service in a specific accident case,
right,
or injury case.
Right, but I mean, the argument being that their argument is it's incorrect to say that this is devoid of contractual features because there are contractual origins to these claims.
There are some contractual origins to some of the claims, but the claims that we're facing in these particular cases are brought by medical providers that are not under contract. They're not in network. They oftentimes refuse to go in network because they want to get what they want to get. It's about the money in that case.
Somehow, mystically, these contracts between patients and physicians become something other than contracts. Why shouldn't we consider the doctors within the workers' comp arena to be third-party beneficiaries? They have an original contract with the patient. When it's work-related, they become third-party beneficiaries, and the workers' comp carrier or the employer is now responsible for the payment. Why shouldn't we view it that way?
Well, they're not actually a third-party beneficiary because there's no contract to which they would be the beneficiary of. The contract, and they tried to argue this in the appellate division, that the contract we would be, we being the insurance carrier, we would be the beneficiary of the contract between the medical provider and the injured worker. And that doesn't work. And the doctor is not a beneficiary of a contract between anybody because there is no contract.
When these arrangements between the physician and the patient begin, don't the patients sign things saying that I'm responsible for this? Don't they sign some contractual forms?
Yes, they absolutely do.
So all of these start out as contracts, no?
They do start out as contracts, yes. But let me try to draw an analogy for you. If a person is injured in a supermarket, they slip and fall in the aisle of a supermarket, they have a tort claim. They have a tort claim where they have the ability to sue for punitive damages, for compensatory damages, for pain and suffering. The supermarket has defenses, contributory negligence. But if that person is an employee of the supermarket and is injured in the same kind of incident but during the course of their employment, that is no longer a tort claim. It's a workers' compensation claim. Why? Because the legislature said so. By operation of law, the tort claim is now a workers' compensation claim. By the same analogy, the legislature, when it said exclusive jurisdiction for these contracts or these claims, whatever you want to fashion them as, is within the Division of Workers' Compensation, the legislature extinguished the contract claim because the employer is statutorily obligated to provide treatment and pay for treatment as a result of a work-related injury.
And in fact, the amendments in 2012 specifically say, doctor, if you want to get paid, you got to file in comp court, not superior court.
Exactly.
Specifically says that. So they answered all these contractual issues, these jurisdictional issues by saying, however we interpret it, but when we provide that treatment to you, you can call it a contract between patient and doctor, you can call it a comquat, you bring your claim in the comp court nowhere else, correct?
Exactly.
So doesn't that answer the question that the doc gets paid if the comp court says it's work-related, you get paid?
Exactly.
And typically in the workers' comp statute, doesn't the statute specifically say, notwithstanding the ambiguity of this section, that the statute of limitations runs 2 years from the last payment, whatever the heck that payment was?
Yes.
Correct? So if a medical provider, by the way, you may correct me on this one, but this is how I always operated. If the medical provider provides treatment for 5 years from the date of the accident, work-related accident, work-related injury, back injury, still getting treatment, 5 years down the road, and in 5 years, in 6 years, 10 months, they haven't gotten paid, they bring the claim in workers' comp court, correct?
They can, yes.
Okay, because the last payment, 5 years after the accident, was within 2 years of the claim being made by the doc.
Yes.
So the ambiguity we have to deal with is, what do we do when there's a gap between last payment, I think, I may be wrong, please correct me, if you don't, they will. The last payment is made more than 2 years. If the last payment is made more than 2 years before the next treatment, and the treatment is for that same condition, how do they get paid for that? And I think that's what kind of everybody's asking, because you got a bad back because you lifted a barrel and you hurt it during work, and you're getting treated, and everything seems okay. And more than 2 years after your last payment, there's an aggravation clearly related to that original injury. How does that doctor get paid?
If he files within 2 years of the
date of treatment. He didn't, because he didn't know he was going to treat him within 2 years.
Then he doesn't get paid.
At all.
At all. Now, I agree with most of what you said there.
Correct me.
Part of the problem in this case is if there's a course, not just this case, but all of these cases, if there's a course of ongoing treatment, and as was pointed out just a few moments ago, if there's treatment on January 1st and January 10th and January 15th, that gives rise, according to Judge Martino, each one gives rise to a separate cause of action, a separate claim.
Theoretically, if they don't get paid.
If they don't get paid. So the ongoing treatment and then payment on these ongoing treatments and then a gap of payments, I would argue, does not necessarily revive the ability to file a claim for those earlier payments.
Where does it say that?
It doesn't. That's what Judge Martino said.
I understand.
And the reason that he said that, and let me go back to Judge Martino's decision. Judge Martino handles these cases. He administers these kind of cases along with the thousands of workers' compensation cases that he does on a daily basis. And so he had to fit this analysis into what he faces every day.
And so when he analogized the date of service for each of the claims to the date when the cause of action accrues and being similar to the date of the accident, he did so for a reason. So that there would be a date certain that everybody knew about. The doctor knew about it. The respondent knew about it. The employer respondent knew about it. So that there would be a fixed date for each of the claims within which everybody knew that the claim had to be filed.
All right, now correct me. I always thought you can make a claim for comp within 2 years of the last payment.
Yes.
The last payment was any payment.
Yes.
So if the injured worker, if this isn't answered clearly in the statute, we're going to have to figure it out. If the injured worker would have a claim for that treatment that he got from that doctor, because the last treatment he got from another doctor or the last partial payment he received was within 2 years.
Yes.
Why couldn't that doctor go into comp court and say last payment was for anything was less than 2 years ago, we have a claim for new medical treatment? Why couldn't that doctor do that? What tells us he can't?
If the worker is within 2 years, the doctor is going to be within 2 years.
Of
unless
the
I'm
last
misunderstanding
payment.
Your premise.
No, you're not. Well, the last payment.
Okay.
Dr. X gave him a something treatment
right.
within 2 years. Dr. Y now gives him another but related treatment within 2 years of that Dr. X's treatment.
Okay.
He's got a claim in comp court.
Dr. Y definitely does. Dr. X may not,
well,
depending
unless
on how
we
the
say
time
he
works.
Can. Unless we say he does. Where does it say he can't?
It doesn't say that he can't except for the 2 year statute of limitations.
Well,
and let's use some dates. Let's say Dr. X treated on December 1st, 2017. Dr. Y treated on January 1st, 2018. And Dr. X, the first doctor, doesn't file his claim within 2 years of December 1st, 2017.
How does that make sense, though? Where does it say that in the statute?
Because that's what the 2 year statute of limitations is supposed to govern. Just like the petitioner. If the petitioner had only treated with Dr. X on December 1st, 2017 and didn't file his claim until 2020, he would be barred.
No, but December 31st, 2019, he wouldn't be.
That's correct.
Okay.
But the same rules for filing have to apply to both.
And that's where I'm, okay, maybe I'm not being understood. This
okay.
is my point.
Okay.
If it could be two years. No, it's okay. I'm not always that clear. Just ask anybody on this court or in my family. No comment. You have the right to remain silent. If 2 years from the last payment is 2 years from the last payment of any kind.
Okay.
Then the petitioner, last payment in comp, petitioner has a right to make a claim within 2 years of the last medical payment by the insurance carrier for any doc, any partial disability.
That's correct.
Now he goes back to a different doctor within 2 years, and the different doctor is treating that same condition, and it's clearly work-related. Why shouldn't, if the petitioner could make the application for that payment of that bill by a different doctor, why should not that different doctor be able to make that same claim?
The different doctor can,
right.
But the first doctor cannot if he doesn't file within 2 years.
Understood.
Okay, so I agree. The different doctor can file the payment.
Okay, so I misunderstood your answer,
okay.
Which was probably a lot more simple than my question, but that was what I always understood, the current status of comp law, the current statute of limitations under comp law,
yes.
And the difference is, the only difference is, under the 12 statute, 2012, that doc can only sue under the workers' compensation statute as amended.
Yes, for work-related injuries.
Exactly, and his claim is bound by the same statute of limitations that the petitioner is bound by.
And should be, yes. That's our contention.
I didn't say should or shouldn't, but that's your argument.
Yes, that's my argument.
Okay. And that
I think
that,
I understand.
That whole back and forth that we just heard is different if it's a denial.
If it's a denied claim, let me try that again. If it's a denied claim, yes.
Then you have to look back under the plain language of the statute to the date on which the accident occurred.
I would disagree because, as you pointed out earlier, if it's a denied claim and nobody files a claim petition and they want to file a claim, they have to bring in proofs to establish their cause of action. and their cause of action cannot accrue until they have provided treatment.
Then all these Talmudic arguments that I'm hearing would be totally unnecessary if we just apply 14-1, the contract provision that has seemingly always governed this. And your argument, it seems, has to be merely because 15-1 says that workers' comp has exclusive jurisdiction, that somehow implicitly the legislature intended to completely abrogate the typical statute of limitations that would govern, right?
Yes-ish, Judge.
Go ahead.
Let me try to explain my equivocation there. The 6-year statute of limitation for contracts has never applied in the Division of Workers' Compensation. 6 years is not mentioned anywhere in the statute. The legislature, when it drafted the Workers' Compensation Act, only put 2 years in for all claims. That's for all claimants, no matter who you are. If you're a PIP carrier seeking reimbursement under Section 40, if you are a dependent spouse seeking reimbursement for the death of your spouse, a dependent child, the estate, everybody has 2 years and 2 years only. There's no place in the statute that you can find a reference to 6 years. And I do want to point out to the court that the decision in Christodoulou actually shows that the 6 years was not applied in that case. I won't bore the court with all of the details of Christodoulou, but one of the most important aspects of Christodoulou for purposes of today is that in Christodoulou, the medical provider in that case provided treatment to the deceased worker before he died and then presented its bills as part of the proposed workers' compensation claim that the petitioner had filed. They did not file a claim petition. The death occurred in 1996. It was represented to the medical provider that their bills would be taken care of. Surprisingly, they weren't. They Section 20'd the case for $50,000, knowing that there was $700,000 in medical bills out there. The medical provider was shocked, as you might be, when their bills weren't taken care of, when they were promised to be taken care of, and they wanted to be paid. In 2000, which is 4 years after the death and 4 years after the date of service, they filed a motion to vacate the Section 20, and they filed a motion in the division seeking to present their bills as a medical provider seeking reimbursement. The appellate division denied those motions. The Division of Workers' Compensation denied those motions. The appellate division affirmed that denial. And this court denied certification.
Wait. Christodoulou?
Christodoulou. Now this is the original case filed by the medical provider in the Division of Workers' Compensation.
Are you talking about the Christodoulou that we handled?
The Christodoulou that you handled. Now, the main case was arising out of the civil case, and that's where the long decision that we all talk about comes from. But if you look
because they filed, because I'm a little familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. I thought that
opinion.
You might be.
I wonder who wrote that.
As I recall, you had a laboring hand in that one. But
so, in that case, the medical provider was...
I'm sorry, they were...
The medical provider was kept out of the workers. They thought they were going to get paid.
Absolutely.
And they settled from under them. And what they did was say, this filed in the law division.
Well, they did, but
we said nothing wrong with that since they were not apprised of what was going on in the workers' comp court.
Absolutely. That's exactly what you said in Christodoulou, the reported decision. But
your contention is that the 2012 amendments changed all that.
Yes, I'm not sure Christodoulou would be decided the same way today. But what I wanted to point out to Justice Albom and to the court is that if you review the procedural history, what happened before the civil action was they filed in the division. And the division denied their motion because it was filed 4 years after the date of service.
And despite the fact that it was so-called work-related, they still were able to file in the law division.
At that time, because there was no amendment to Section 15. That amendment didn't take place till 8 years later.
So to be clear then,
yes.
Prior to 2012, how long did a medical service provider have to pursue the claim?
Well, it's not an easy answer because there is a contract claim for 2012, and the contract claim against the injured worker lasted 6 years. That's the time period within which they could file. However, and I know this firsthand because I did this a lot, if there was a pending workers' compensation claim, we would file a motion to transfer any contract claim to the Division of Workers' Compensation, and I like to say I'm 100% perfect on my record of getting that to happen, because the Superior Court recognized that these were work-related injuries that should be handled in the division. So what happened as a matter of practice was that these contract claims by medical providers in workers' compensation cases were transferred to the division to be handled there.
But how,
the answer to your question is 6 years.
So it remained 6 years.
It was 6 years for the contract claim between the medical provider
and the injured. So the transfer only affected the venue, not the statute of limitations.
Well, technically, yes.
And non-technically, yes.
Well, if you read the procedural history in Christodoulou, that's not, in practice, what was being done.
But that's precisely what we
said
should be
done. That's what Christodoulou was about.
We said that those, when there is an active workers' comp case and there is a work-related contract claim brought by a medical provider in the law division, we should transfer the we said those cases should be transferred to the workers' comp court. We didn't say that if the medical provider filed 3 or 4 years afterwards, that claim was going to be extinguished. All we said was that they should be transferred, correct?
You didn't say that in the Christodoulou from the Superior Court. But when you denied certification of the appellate division's affirmance of the dismissal of the claim petition filed by the medical provider, you did.
Well, I'm afraid we don't read cert denials in that way.
Right. Well, I like to try to be creative when I raise these procedural histories. But I think that it stands for that proposition. If you really look at the procedural history and what happened, 6 years has never been applied in the Division of Workers' Compensation. And that's really the point that I'm trying to make about the Christodoulou procedural history.
Here's the question I wanted to get at. Pre-2012, a doctor had 6 years.
To file against a worker.
2012, the amendment is, using the language, exclusive jurisdiction is now in workers' comp court.
Correct.
There's no express statement anywhere in the legislative history, or tell us if there is, that adjusts the statute of limitation or addresses the statute of limitation. Express statement.
That's a correct statement. There is nothing in the statute, there's nothing in the legislative history that addresses the statute of limitations for filing. But what I would point the court to is the fact that the legislature contemplated putting in separate procedures and elected not to do so because they found that the procedures and the rules in place were effective to handle the medical provider claims.
But does procedures in that setting mean statute of limitations?
I think that it has to, Judge, because it is it's a jurisdictional thing. You have to file within the jurisdiction of the division, granted.
I thought the procedures was in reference to potential arbitration proceedings that would have been imposed on physicians.
That was one of the things contemplated.
That was explicit.
It was. I'm not denying it. It was. Arbitration was contemplated. I believe discovery was additional discovery.
So where we know that arbitration was explicit. Where was statute of limitations explicit in the legislative history?
Again, it's not.
There's no mention of it.
It's not. But the statute of limitations that is in the statute wasn't changed by the amendment to Section 12.
Is one of your arguments that if the doctor gives treatment for a work-related injury, the Superior Court, because of the 2012 amendments, no longer has jurisdiction to adjudicate that claim?
Yes.
So that claim would have to be brought in workers' comp court?
Yes.
And I guess your second argument is, if it's brought in workers' comp, the workers' comp statute controls?
Yes.
But
that's
so
exactly
no mention,
the argument.
There's no mention of statute of limitations, but there is mention of jurisdiction.
Yes.
Would your argument likewise be that if this claim more than 2 years after the last date of treatment, or if no treatment denied claim more than 2 years after the accident, is brought in Superior Court, it would simply be dismissed?
Yes.
With prejudice?
Because there's no basis for
there's
it.
There's no jurisdiction.
Correct.
The legislature said that.
Exactly. If it's a non-work-related incident, then the contract statute applies and there is a Superior Court
action. So if I carry that to its conclusion, logically, you're asking us to conclude that the workers' comp statute of limitations applies, not the law of contract, which would be 6 years brought in Superior Court, rather than, otherwise it would have to be 6 years in workers' comp court, would it not? They have to bring a claim. If we decided that the contract claim persists and apply to 6 year statute of limitations, the 2012 amendment is requiring a contract claim to be brought in comp court within 6 years, not under the comp statute of limitations, but under the contract statute of limitations.
That's the argument that the medical providers are making, yes.
And so is anybody disputing, I couldn't really tell, so maybe they should answer the question. Is anybody disputing that the claim's got to be brought in workers' compensation court?
I don't believe so, but I'll defer to them to defend their position on that. But I want to get back to, and you raise an important question.
Once in a while.
The nature of these claims are not contract claims. That's the confusing part here.
I think we understand your position on that, and I want to give your friends a chance to.
I don't like to hog all of the time. Most of it, but not all.
We'll have you back for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Yes, ma'am.
May it please the court. I adopt the arguments of counsel, and I do want to address the issue of the first visit to the doctor. It is my experience that the doctor's billing department is contacting the employer and seeking the name of the compensation carrier, and the relationship develops from that. And specifically in the cases before the court, there was an ongoing relationship between the carrier and the doctor. In the particular case of Paris, the doctor was authorized by the carrier. So the worker is not going into that doctor and saying, please provide me treatment and I'll sign a contract. The worker, under the Workers' Compensation Act, is directed to that doctor. And the doctor is either has had contact with the carrier to accept the patient for treatment, and knows then and there that the payment is coming under the Workers' Compensation Act, that it's the carrier who will be paying, and there is no direct contract with the employee.
So let's say the carrier doesn't direct. The employee goes to the doctor, and in good faith, the doctor thinks this doesn't seem to be a work-related injury and treats the person. And then later on, the employee brings a workers' comp action. And now the billing is 3 years out, and the doctor is now attempting to bring his or her claim in workers' comp 3 years later.
There are safeguards
under your interpretation. Is the doctor out under the statute of limitations bringing the claim 3 years afterwards, having in good faith filed in the law division?
Well, presently the doctor would not be successful in the law division under the 2012 amendment. But the doctor would have due diligence when taking on a patient to ascertain who he's billing. Is he billing a private plan? Is he billing Medicaid? Is it a work-related? The doctor always takes a history of how the accident occurred. And the doctor is commenting almost always on whether or not it's a work-related injury. And the billing department is following up. And a healthcare, if it was a private healthcare provider, you see the letters going out to the workers saying, was this a work-related? Because the private healthcare carrier wants to know whether or not it transferred to the comp carrier. So there are actions on the part of a physician. Either the worker is being sent to that physician and he knows where his money is coming from, or he has to take some due diligence on his part.
You know, sometimes people wind up getting medical treatment before all this insurance stuff is figured out. So the patient is treated, and you know, some maybe the worker's comp carrier is going to say, "I'm not paying that." They contact them.
Well,
I'm sure that scenario.
But that's answering your Honor's question.
Go ahead.
If you're saying how would the doctor know who to bill, if the doctor hears from the comp carrier that it's denied claim, then under the 2012 provision, the amendment, the doctor should be filing within 2 years of his service.
In comp court.
In comp court.
Why?
By the way.
Why should he file in comp court? He doesn't know.
If he wants the comp carrier to pay.
Why can't he just file in law division? He's got a contract with the patient. The patient has contract for his services. So the doctor has fixed.
Well, he's not foreclosed.
A broken bone or whatever.
He's not foreclosed. He can file if he's saying that his contract is with the injured worker. He can file. The 2012 amendment did not take that away from the doctor. You're saying the doctor doesn't know that it's work-related. The doctor doesn't believe that it's work-related. And the doctor didn't get paid after 3 years. Of course he can go into Superior Court and file. He's saying it's not work-related.
And in that case, the insurance company that got billed, or the client who got billed, would claim it is work-related, and they litigate that in Superior Court. And Superior Court either transferred or didn't, if that got litigated, somebody would have to determine it is or is not work-related. If it's not work-related, the Superior Court claim survives or gets transferred back. If it is work-related, it gets dealt with in comp court. In other words, it works the way any other insurance billing works.
Well, if the doctor's saying it's not work-related, there would be no evidence in the Superior Court that it was work-related.
He just thought, look, the doctor isn't in the workplace. The only thing the doctor knows is whatever information is related. Information can be related by the patient. Comp carrier can say, I don't think that's work-related. You're on your own. But later, the worker can file a comp claim, and maybe the worker's comp judge will say, this is a comp claim. And then 3 years has passed, and you're saying, what? The doctor now no longer has a viable option for getting paid?
In the workers' compensation world, it is the carrier who's directing treatment. You're picking a scenario that is just not the common aspect of workers' comp. And I also believe that if the doctor treated, and you're saying only one time and 3 years later he never filed for payment, is what you're saying.
Maybe sending bills out, they're just not getting paid by the maybe sending them to the patient, not getting paid.
Well, if bringing a claim petition, the employee would place on the claim petition all providers, so the carrier would have notice of the provider. The carrier reaches out and attempts to secure records, and then the bill is sent to the carrier. There are mechanisms in place, and the Comp Act is for the purpose of providing benefits to the employee, and bringing this into the Comp Act is for the benefit of the employee, resolving these disputes, if work-related, so that a doctor is not then going seeking a collection against the employee, is for the benefit of the employee.
Ms. Lynn, what else would you like to tell us? We're almost done with your 10 minutes, believe it or not.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Ms. Stryker.
May it please the court, I will try to be brief, and I do incorporate my colleagues' presentations before this court, but I did want to address the question of the 2 years. The legislature in 2012 not only said exclusive jurisdiction was in the division, but it also said, and you cannot balance bill the employee or the injured worker or your patient. So, you know, in this court's decision in Chris UMass case, the court recognized there were two separate causes of action. There's the contractual action between the physician and the patient, and then there is a separately created statutory action between the physician and the employer, the employer's, the payer, the employer's insurance company. Those are two separate types of action. In 2012, and this court commented on the fact that the act did not nullify the contractual arrangement between the physician and patient. Well, fast forward, we're back before this court 15 years later with a legislature who has chosen to nullify the contractual action between the physician and the patient in the workers' comp arena. We are asking this court for a bright line rule. There is a statute of limitations, it's 2 years. In every statute of limitations in this state, there are always exceptions to the rule. There's always cases where there's going to be reliance, estoppel, waiver, good faith arguments that will have to be brought before the division, and if the division determines that it's not work-related, nothing extinguishes the claim any longer. It is still a contractual claim if it's not under the Workers' Compensation Act. So we're asking this court for, yes, we need a bright line rule that it's 2 years. The jurisdiction of the Division of Workers' Comp is limited to 2 years. These are, whether you classify physicians as claimants under the Act, it is certainly a claim for workers' compensation benefits. And if there's no benefits payable because it's not covered by the Act, you go to Superior Court, you have the defense that the time should be told while you were litigating this issue before the Division of Workers' Comp. But going back to the statute talks about exclusive jurisdiction for disputed medical charges. There are approximately 7,000 cases pending before the Division of Disputed Medical Charges. What does this mean? It means that out-of-network physicians or, you know, physicians who do not have an arrangement with an employer and therefore have no fee schedule, because New Jersey does not have a fee schedule or a negotiated fee agreement, are suing because whatever they're paid, they claim was not usual, customary, and reasonable. They're reasonable charges. That's this case. Every single claim before the court is this case. 90% of the cases pending before the decision are about UCR. The hospitals state in their brief. They have thousands of cases pending before the division about UCR. There is no reason why a bright line rule can't be applied for 2 years. You get a statement. There's not a question as whether it's a covered claim. There's a question of whether you are entitled to $3,000 or $8,000. Why apply a six-year statute of limitations? We've got the workers' comp rating system is retrospective. You look back 3 years. Now, employers are now getting claims filed for medical expenses they paid 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that they have no knowledge of, that they have no reason to assume beyond the 2 years that there's any dispute for payment. The physicians follow this procedure in other arenas. It's followed in the auto insurance arena. There's claim payment and claim submission deadlines under health insurance laws. There's no reason, there's no policy reason why 6 years needs to apply. Yes, there are contractual claims. And not to say that these are all statutory claims. There may be a preferred provider agreement between the insurance company and the hospital, or the medical providers and the insurer. In those cases, if there is a breach of the preferred provider organization agreement or other agreement, those agreements usually have their own statute of limitations, their own dispute resolution procedures, and if the claim is not about a disputed medical charge, which is usually a coding dispute, then it goes to the Superior Court as a contractual action. For example, if there's a breach of confidentiality provisions or non-compete provisions, that doesn't go before the Division of Workers' Comp. But we're talking here about a very limited class of claims. We're not talking about the case where it's a gotcha situation, where an employee goes to get treatment. We've all filled out the forms. Is it work-related? If they check off no, Again, the doctor's not supposed to know that, but they get the health insurance information and it's submitted to the health insurance carrier. The same way if it's, they'll contact the employer. If it is, if the box is checked, they'll contact an auto insurance carrier. Is this auto related? We're asking this court to set a bright line rule. We believe that the history of the Workers' Compensation Act makes clear that the jurisdiction of the division is limited to 2 years, and there's solid policy reasons for that determination. It's not the first time the court's been called upon to interpret a statute and to reach a result that is perhaps not clear. And yes, we concede no one addressed the statute of limitations, and I would submit you didn't need to address it. The contract claim was extinguished, and all claims for workers' compensation benefits under the Act have always been limited to 2 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. DeSico.
May it please the Court, Michael DeSico on behalf of the medical providers in this action. I think the disposition of this consolidated appeal really is based more on what the legislature did not do than what it did. The legislature did not amend the 15-51 to provide that medical providers are within a claimant for compensation. And it did not address the statute of limitations at all in 15-15. 15-15 is a jurisdictional statute as to where the claim may be brought. It doesn't deal at all with the time period within which the claim may be brought. The time period within which the claim may be brought is garnered by the nature of the claim that is brought by the medical provider in now exclusively the workers' compensation division. In Christodoulou, this court recognized that there was an independent claim by that medical provider, and it indicated that that claim was statutorily based on the Workers' Compensation Act. When there is not an express statement as to the statute of limitations that applies to a statutory claim, the law is very clear under prior Supreme Court precedent, and I'll cite the Montel's case, which was an LAD case, in which the court indicated you need to take a look at the nature of the injury to ascertain what type of claim is being pursued. And in this type of case, when a medical provider is bringing a claim in the division, it's an economic claim. It's a claim that may not be for breach of contract, but it's based on a contract that it made with the patient. And I want to deal with something that Justice Albin stated about a third-party beneficiary status. I found that argument intriguing, and I thought about that argument. And I take a look at NJSA 34:15-9, and it is the original Workers' Compensation Act, and it reads that every contract of hiring made subsequent to the fourth day of July 1911 shall be presumed to have been made with reference to the provisions of this article, and unless there be a part of such contract, an express statement in writing prior to any accident, either in the contract itself or by written notice from either party to the other that the provisions of this article are not intended to apply, then the Workers' Comp Act does apply. And that creates a contract between the employer and the worker as to workers' comp will be the benefit you have, not a tort. And I submit that the medical provider is a third-party beneficiary of that very contract that is formed under NJSA 34:15-9. I also submit that every aspect of the claim by the medical provider is a contract claim. The gravamen of the harm is he's not being paid for a service rendered, and not being paid the correct amount for a service rendered. As a result of not being paid the correct amount for a service rendered, he has a claim that he can make in the workers' comp division. In fact, that he has to make in the workers' compensation division. And he makes that claim based on a 6-year statute of limitation because it's based on not a contract, because he's not suing on the contract. We're not expanding the jurisdiction of the workers' compensation division by saying, okay, now you consider contract claims. But we're looking at the statutory elements of that claim, and it has to be paid usual and customary and reasonable. And if it's not being paid under those criteria, then it is an economic injury that should be governed by a 6-year statute of limitations. Not expressly a contract claim, but a contract, but a claim that has all of the incidents of a contract claim. And as a result, the court should, and I think the court has recognized that that requires a 6-year statute of limitations. With respect to the actual language used in the statute, we've all agreed that there is no mention of a statute of limitations. And the appellate division had it correctly. Had there intended to be such a sea change in the law regarding the period of limitations within which a claim could be made in the division, then it would have said so much more clearly. We've heard significant public policy arguments about, well, the workers' comp division is being overburdened by the number of claims filed. The Workers' Compensation Division doesn't get to write the legislation that can reduce their workload. The legislature did that, and it did it here by saying, okay, exclusive jurisdiction on these claims is present. But interestingly, it didn't eliminate the contractual cause of action. Contractual cause of action exists and can still be filed if, in fact, the claim is not related to a work injury.
So deal directly with the argument that we've heard. Legislature has said in 2012, if there's a dispute over compensation for a work-related injury, you must go to workers' comp. And implicit in that is you play by the rules of workers' comp, which calls for a 2-year statute of limitations.
The rules of workers' comp are set by the legislature as far as the statute of limitations. That 2-year limitation is not set forth as applicable to a medical provider's claim. It's applicable to a claimant for compensation, but that has never been interpreted to be a medical provider. A claimant for compensation under 15-51 is separate and apart from a medical provider. If you look closely at the statute, you can see it is set up in a way requires the petition to be filed under 15-51 to include all kinds of information that a medical provider would never include or could include in its claim. It shall state the respective addresses of the petitioner, the facts related to the employment at the time of the injury and its extent and character, the amount of wages received at the time. Respondents submit that 15-51 has no applicability to a medical provider. It's to a claimant, whether it be a dependent or the actual injured worker. And the statutory scheme set forth in 51 is based entirely on that definition of a claimant for compensation. This court has held that payment of medical benefits to the provider is not compensation.
Well,
it's separate.
Everything depends upon how you read 15-15, whether or not that changed the definition of who a claimant is. So let's just read it together for a second. Exclusive jurisdiction for any disputed medical charge arising from any claim for compensation for a work-related injury. So let's stop right there. So we have there's a medical charge arising from any claim for compensation for a work-related injury. If the medical provider files a claim in the workers' compensation court, Is the medical charge now arising from a claim for compensation for a work-related injury brought by the doctor? You following me?
I'm following that. I don't know if I am, Justice, and I apologize for that. What
I'm trying to figure out whether or not under that language the medical provider becomes a claimant.
I don't think it does, Judge, Justice. I believe when it says any claim for compensation, that's referring to the underlying workers' claim.
Let's say he hasn't. There is no workers' comp claim. Okay, the worker has gone to his physician. He's checked off that little box that this is a work-related injury. Payment hasn't been made by the carrier. The physician now goes into court with his disputed medical charge and now sets the wheels in motion in workers' comp court. What I'm trying to figure out is whether or not the medical provider's, I'll call it claim petition, whether that's arising from a claim for compensation for work-related injury under those circumstances. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, Justice. And yes, if it is a claim for compensation, then there is exclusive jurisdiction, and that's a decision.
Okay, so my question then is the medical provider a claimant under this language?
Under the language in 15. Yes, I submit that he is a claimant for compensation because that triggers his exclusive jurisdiction element of the provision.
Does the medical provider then become a claimant under 15-51?
I don't think he does, Judge, without a legislative determination on that point, because now we're twisting and turning and trying to fit a certain...
Well, that's the reason why I'm asking. Is he a claimant for purposes of 1515, but not for purposes of 1551? How do we work that out?
I think we hearken back to the legislative, to the nature of the claim being made by the medical provider.
But 1551 doesn't make any such distinction. It just talks about a claimant.
It does, but it doesn't mention a claimant in the context of a medical provider. The claimant definition there seems pretty obvious that it means a simple a worker who has been injured.
Can I ask you one question, just to clarify something you said before? The medical provider provides treatment. The medical provider gets partial payment from the workers' compensation carrier, but there's a dispute as to what is fair and reasonable compensation. So the claim by the provider is there's a balance due. I didn't get what I was entitled to. You owe me $1,000. Is it your contention that that's a claim that the provider can now bring under the statute of limitations, 6-year statute of limitations?
Yes.
So
in the workers' comp division.
Okay, but there's not necessarily a dispute about it being work-related. The only dispute is the amount of the bill, how much should be paid. Correct?
Correct, but it emanates from a work-related injury and thus
understood.
The exclusive jurisdiction.
Is that most of what we're dealing with here? Because I heard counsel...
I think that is what we're dealing with in these five cases by these
petitions. So in these five cases, in workers' comp, they were awarded benefits, including medical expenses, that were paid to the providers at a certain rate, whatever that rate is. And within 2 years of that bill, they brought a claim saying they were owed more money for that same treatment.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
Okay. Yes, that's the genesis of these claims.
Just making sure.
They came through the division.
I got you.
Do you have any support? You said before the legislative history is silent. Does the task force report that was driving this issue initially by the Division of Workers' Comp back in 2010 shed any light one way or the other on the arguments we're hearing on the statute of limitations?
It didn't address the statute of limitations at all. I know that Judge Martino interpreted it such that the procedures would remain in place, which would mean the statute of limitations wasn't...
But there's no mention of statute of limitations.
But there is no mention at all, and I think that is extrinsic evidence of what the statute means. There was no intent, there was no recognition, there was no studying of that statute of limitations and what, in fact, the amendment, what effect it had on the statute of limitations. And I submit that the absence of that language or information contained in that legislative history indicates that there was no intent to change the statute of limitations, which had been a 6 year and has always been 6 years.
But in that task force report, it does seem to presume that there's already a claim that's been processed through the division or is currently pending. There's a debate over no longer requiring motions to intervene, but just allow the medical provider claim to be meshed with the underlying claim of the injured worker. So we're already within the context of claims that are controlled by these various two-year periods, are we not?
There are various claims, yes. There are various claims controlled by the two-year period. This has never been one, this medical provider claim, and I don't think the legislative history indicates it was meant to be expanded to include this now in those claims that had always been subject to the two-year statute of limitations in 1551.
I want to understand the full breadth of your argument.
I'm sorry?
I want to understand the full breadth of your argument. So worker goes to physician on January 1st to have some medical procedure that the patient says is work-related. The workers' comp carrier in February pays what it thinks the physician is owed. The physician thinks he's owed a lot more. Then 5 years and 10 months later, the physician brings a case in the workers' comp court. There's no pending action there. Your position is that they can do that.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Okay. Based on the nature of that claim being an economic claim, which would require a 6 year statute of limitations.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, if there are any other questions, though.
Other questions? Thank you. Mr. Stepmeyer.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I just want to address the question of claimant in the Workers' Comp Act. We did a thorough analysis in our brief over every time they utilized that term claimant in the Act. And I think it's pretty clear if you look through every single provision of that Act where that word is used, it really is equivalent with the term employee. And if you take a look at Section 15, they don't use the term claimant. They talk about filing a claim, but the term claimant is not there. Therefore, when the legislature wrote the Act, I think they meant claimant to be synonymous with employee.
Well, originally, but the question is, does 1515 change that? And your colleague said, well, under that language, I guess they're a claimant.
I believe he's mistaken, Judge.
Okay.
And once again, they don't use the term claimant there. And I think claimant is meant as a term of art to mean something very specific in the Act. And they didn't use it in 15, maybe for a reason.
Well, what does arising from any claim mean in 1515 if the worker hasn't brought the claim? What does it mean?
Well, I'm looking at 15 and the language there a little differently than others, because the new language that they added, they talk about fees for treatment or medical services that have been authorized by the employer or determined by the division to be the responsibility of the employer. So those are two things where they've either authorized it or there's already been a determination by the division that this is authorized treatment, okay, or compensable treatment. Then it goes exclusive jurisdiction for any disputed medical charge. And it doesn't say service. That's an interesting choice of word, charge. And I think that's supposed to mean if we're fighting over how much, then it has to go there. If they use the word service, I might have a different view of that. But I think that word charge there means something significant.
Well, that definition would then tie into the legislature's use of balanced billing, because we're referring back to something that had already been determined to be covered by workers' comp scheme, right?
Absolutely, Justice. Yes. One thing I heard that someone was trying to equivalent billing the patient in a workers' comp case with balanced billing. That's not always the case. If the charges are completely denied, that's not balanced billing. It's when you receive a payment for those services and you don't think it's enough and then go after the patient. That is actually balanced billing. So that is, you know, so I think it's something we have to look at 15 very particularly to see what they meant there.
Well, wasn't that the express legislative intent to eliminate balanced billing?
Yes, absolutely. But if the charges are denied outright, then it wouldn't constitute balanced billing. If they say these are not work-related.
Right.
You know, we did not...
Is there any scenario where the law division can decide whether something's compensable or not? Is that a determination that has to be made and only made by the Division of Workers' Comp?
That's a good question.
I assumed that the answer was that it had to be made by the Division of Workers' Comp.
I could foresee maybe some litigation where it would come up, but in most, in the majority of cases, probably it's going to be in the division. I would agree.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't the exclusive language, exclusive jurisdiction, help support that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But, you know, we did not argue for 6 years. You know, we took a sort of a nuanced view, and I'd really like to remind the court about that now, because, you know, we also had a big problem with Judge Martino's decision, because we don't think he followed the act, and there's a way to follow the act and get, you know, have 2 years apply, but to do it in a different way than Judge Martino did. He wanted to break down every date of service separately. And so this date of service is one statute of limitations. This next date of service is another statute of limitations. And a payment on this one doesn't affect the payment, the statute on that one. And that doesn't make any sense to me because the Workers' Comp Act doesn't make those kind of distinctions. Section 51 doesn't talk about that. It just talks about payment. And a payment will restart the statute. So, you know, our view of it is to look at worker medical provider claims in the division in the way that the Act talks about them. We are filing claims in the division on behalf of the injured worker. Section 15 literally says that. The physician can file it, or any other person can file it on the worker's behalf. So what does that mean? So if our claims are derivative of the worker's rights, we're filing the claims on their behalf. Why don't we have a shared statute of limitations with the worker so that any payment made to the worker or another physician who's treating the worker would also be applied to the physicians so that everyone has a shared statute?
You're saying just like the claimant, if the medical provider has a dispute about a bill, it's 2 years. The 2 years starts to run from the last date of the last payment of workers' compensation benefits, whether it be a different medical bill, a partial permanent payment, whatever it is. 2 years from that date starts the 2 year statute of limitations. And it's not until there have been no more payments, comp's done, maybe a Section 50 out of it, whatever. 2 years later, you're out of luck.
Yes, but that could go on for a while. So, and, you know, we're not
coming up
with...
By the way, some of these claims go on for years and years and years.
Yes.
Partial payments can go on for quite a length of time.
That's true. That is true. But I think that comports with the language utilized in the Act. You have a share, you have us, we have medical providers filing claims on their behalf, and then you have the Act talking about, you know, claims. I mean, Section 51 really is talking about claims by injured workers. And, you know, if you look at the cases I cited in my brief, there are cases involving dependency claims and PIP claims where it's been held that the dependent gets the benefit of any payments that the original injured worker got, and that they would have a shared statute. So our position is, why not just throw medical providers into that mix so that everyone has a shared statute? It comports with our case law, and it comports with the language of the Act, so nobody has to bend over backwards to try to figure out what this statute means.
Thank you. Mr. Smyker.
On behalf of the Medical Society of New Jersey, I join my colleague. Medical providers are not claimants, and they never have been. So we've been doing this for 12 years now, and the employee has a claim petition, and at first, medical providers used to file claim petitions, but then they were specifically instructed that you are not claimants. You are medical providers. And a new application was created solely for the medical provider to file their claims, referred to as a medical provider's application for medical reimbursement for medical treatment, a super redundantly named document, but it exists, and that's what medical providers use to file their claims. They've never been treated as claimants, and they've never been treated as anything other than medical providers who are looking for reimbursement for services that are provided. What is so interesting is that there's this whole discussion about how we're creating new law, and it's never been 6 years, and it's always been 2 years, and the respondents are saying that, it's always been 6 years. Well, guess what? There's a case, remarkably prescient, in 1948 called Oldfield by this court, the Supreme Court. And what the Supreme Court was addressing in Oldfields was a claimant saying that it is the medical provider's receipt of payment that tolls the statute of limitations. And the Supreme Court says the employer has a statutory duty. That statutory duty is to provide medical treatment. Once they've provided the treatment, the obligation between the employer and the employee is at an end. The case law specifically says then how or when he shall pay for the same is of no concern to the workman. The very next sentence, the Supreme Court then says that the employer can be sued by the physician, and the statute of limitations, 6 years. That's what it says in Oldfields. Boy, was I surprised. I read it the first time for one thing. I went back into it in anticipation for today. And then there it is, statute of limitations, 6 years. The physician can sue the employer in a work-related injury.
Where did they sue?
They sued in the Superior Court, and it went up to the Supreme Court.
Okay. They can't do that anymore.
Sue, they didn't. That's the question. They can't sue in Superior Court anymore.
They can't, but if you look at the amendment to what actually happened in 2012, what the legislature said was that the exclusive jurisdiction of these types of claims shall be vested in the Division of Workers' Compensation. It doesn't say that the workers' comp in its entirety applies to medical providers. It doesn't say that you have to find a way to make it work for medical providers the same way it does for claimants.
So you agree that if it's a disputed claim, partial payment is made, there's a dispute as to a balance due from the workers' comp carrier, that workers' comp claim can be brought in workers' comp within 6 years?
Yes.
Okay.
And something interesting happens as well when we get to that 2-year statute of limitations, that funniness between a breach of contract case in Superior Court for 6 years and this attempt to apply the 2-year statute of limitations to a medical provider in the Division of Workers' Compensation. I believe it was Justice Albin that brought this up. And he said, well, what if the medical provider acting in good faith says, this is not a work-related injury. I don't believe it is. I don't think it is. I'm going to go ahead and sue. It's 3 years now. I file my claim against my patient. Let's say the patient was paying whatever happened, right? He was paying the doctor, and then finally he terminated. Doctor says, I'm owed $40,000. I'm going to go ahead and file a claim against my patient. 3 years down the line, the patient then retains counsel, right, has to defend himself, and in that lawsuit says, no, this is a work-related injury. You had 2 years to file your claim in the Division of Workers' Compensation, and you didn't. Now, you actually do have litigation.
Well, wait a minute. How is that request made to the Superior Court?
So
what does that lawyer
do? So the medical provider files suit against
the patient. No, I know that.
Sure.
The employee's lawyer.
The employee's lawyer files a
motion.
A motion to dismiss.
No,
and says
motion to remove it to workers' comp.
Remove it, transfer it, whatever you
want
to call it.
And the workers' comp judge will make a decision. And if it's work-related, then we have the statute of limitations issues.
But then they say the division doesn't have jurisdiction over this because the statute of limitation has come and gone on this issue. It's run in 2 years. We're now at the 3-year mark. And so in order for the plaintiff to now defend their case, you may have a trial, right, with a jury on the issue of whether or not this is a work-related injury.
Correct me if I'm wrong, if you go into comp court and they say it is work-related and it's more than 2 years and you're dismissed, you're dismissed. You're done. You can go to the appellate division. You can then come to us, but you're done. You don't go back to Superior Court.
But there's never a filing by the patient in the Division of Workers' Compensation. And that's just one way in which this weird amalgamation, this weird application of 2 years versus 6 years to a very straightforward issue, the breach of contract issue, it's a 6-year statute of limitations.
Don't those cases happen all the time?
Does it?
Well, a fair amount, as far as I can recall, that there's a dispute as to whether it's a work-related injury, dispute between insurance companies, because the private insurance doesn't want to pay, the comp insurance doesn't want to pay, and the workers' comp court has to decide it, and if they decide it's work-related, it's out of the statute of limitations, it goes, it leaves, it's done.
So today, you have many judges and at the division level that are saying it's a six-year statute of limitations.
Okay,
you have some that are saying it's a two-year statute of limitations. So cases do get dismissed, some don't, and so you actually have these issues go on and on and on.
I'm not aware of that.
The challenge, and that may be the case that as we go on and we deal with these issues, but what was very clear is that Chris DeDula spoke to this, that there was an independent cause of action that the medical provider had, whether it arose under Rabinowitz, purely under unjust enrichment, a quasi-contract that's being raised, whether it's against the employer or the employee, but an independent cause of action exists. In 2012, the legislature, for whatever reason, right, and I think Chris DeDula spoke about this, that it's not about jurisdiction, it's about judicial efficiencies and the division having skill set to deal with these kinds of issues, picked up in 2012 this cause of action and dropped it into the Division of Workers' Compensation. Whether the medical providers wanted it, whether the insurance companies wanted it, is of no matter. We're here now. But what the legislature didn't do, right, is change the statute of limitations, change the status of a medical provider from anything other than a medical provider and not a claimant. And what's interesting is
unless they did it implicitly, which is what your adversaries are saying, Oldfield's right, 6 years, but they're claiming once 1515 was amended to give the workers' comp exclusive jurisdiction, and they're claiming you guys became claimants, then 2 years. And that's the issue before us.
And I'm going to cite where citation is required. I believe the appellate court said it best, that in order to accomplish that, to come to that conclusion, not only do you have to upend 80-plus years of Supreme Court law addressing these issues, you then have to take a square peg, file it down, because of a belief that it's implicitly stated, to fit a square peg into a round hole, and to what end, right? To what end? To minimize a arbitrary date, right? A statute of limitations is an arbitrary date that's set. There's reasons why we have them, right? The memories fade, documents go missing, which, by the way, medical providers are required to retain their documents for years, 7 years at minimum. So for whatever reason, on the one hand, the legislature believes that this arbitrary date in Superior Court should be 6 years, but now the legislature believes that for whatever reason, this arbitrary date here in the Division of Workers' Compensation should be 2 years. So you got to upend 80 years of Supreme Court law, read into this amendment changes that would require you to take a medical provider, turn them into a claimant, and all of the implications that come with that. And I think the appellate division does a fantastic job, and counsel in their papers do a fantastic job of addressing this issue, of all the things that have to change in order to make this work. And there's very little discussion about what the impact is and how this is going to be applied retroactively to medical providers, because there's a great many judges at the division level that say it's a six-year statute of limitations. So what happens to those cases? What happens to all the pending cases that are out there? So we're gonna rewrite implicitly an amendment with retroactive application solely for what purpose and to achieve what end, when it is clear that all along medical providers have been treated separately, right?
How difficult, I mean to stop you, I know you're in a roll, but How difficult is it to do, and how much does it upend to do what your colleague said? Simply say, just like a claimant, a doctor has 2 years from the date of the last payment to make a claim.
Sure.
How difficult is that? How much does that upend? How much does that change? Every comp lawyer, judge in the world understands that concept.
So it upends a lot. And I think again, it was Justice Albin who pointed this out. There's this weird back and forth that has to happen on almost every different type of claim in order to make this work. Like, if it's this type of case, then this happens, and if Dr. X provides services and is not reimbursed, and then Dr. Y is paid for services, and Dr. Y gets paid, then when does the statute run?
That happens in every private insurance claim. That happens in every auto accident. That happens in every claim for medical treatment ever that's ever resulted in any kind of litigation in any court with jurisdiction.
And it
happens every day.
I think Oldfield's directly addresses this because it talks about what's in your knowledge. So you may have a medical provider then that sits and waits 4 years down the line, files a claim, which would otherwise be dismissed under the 2-year statute of limitation, but because another doctor filed it on day one plus 364 and got paid, that now you have this reset of the statute of limitations as it applies to a completely different doctor. Oldfield directly addresses this and says it's what's within your knowledge, right? It's what's within the worker's knowledge. So the doctor doesn't know what other claims are pending. The doctor doesn't know whether there's a pending action by their patient, the employee, and things of that nature. They don't know that. What they do know.
But don't doctors know that when they think there's a work-related injury,
sure,
they would know there's got to be 2 years. Sounds like you're making the argument for the appellants that if everybody knows work-related, you better find out. You got 2 years. They know it's 2 years.
So I think appellant's argument was remarkably beneficial about what doctor's offices actually look like, right? Especially now, there's a lot of changes that are happening in medical providers' offices, and there's this interaction that they're treating, you know, a small subset of patients as opposed to a large number of patients, that their administrative staff is communicating on a daily basis with insurance companies and gathering information, and that all their systems report out and give them all this information. It's a remarkable amount of information that medical providers are being implied to already know. And Oldfields deals with this when they specifically say it's what's within your knowledge. So if you know that you filed a claim 6 years ago and it was denied the next day, you have 6 years from that date to file your claim. You wait 6 years and a day, you're out, right? There's a whole lot of information that's being implied and asked of the medical providers to figure out on how to work with a statutory scheme, right? With a statute of limitations, a jurisdictional issue, where there's no clear evidence by the legislature that was the intent, that it was the intent of them to, hey, from now on these 9 different types of claims, figure out what the statute of limitations is, call these people up, ask for this information, gather this material, and do these things. That is a remarkable amount that's being asked of the medical providers, but to what end, right? If the legislature wanted this to happen, they would have said, medical providers or claimants, make it work, right? Make it work. And by the way, I believe there's a bill currently pending designed to try to change this now. And we can leave it to the legislature.
Can you please draw your argument to a close?
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to ask?
Yeah. So I think there's a bill existing now on this issue, and whether or not it passes legislature, we'll see. But I think what's being asked of this court is to essentially take, for no real clear reason, an unclear implied intent of the legislature, which will upset Supreme Court precedents and will change essentially the face of what exists today through Oldfield, through Rabinowitz, through all these cases, through the statutes, solely to take a statute of limitations and shrink it to here, but not really here, kind of like here, but like maybe a little bit like this and move it around. When the reality is there's such clarity here that the employer has a cause of action, whether it's against the employee, the physician, whether it's against the employee or the employer, and that cause of action sounds in contract, and there's a clear statutory statute of limitations that's set, and that is 6 years, and that's what should be applied to the medical providers in their application for reimbursement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kendall, brief rebuttal. And if you could please address what claimant for compensation under Section 51 refers to, and does it encompass doctors as part of your rebuttal?
I absolutely will, Judge. I'll start with that. As Justice Albom pointed out, and as counsel conceded, claimants is a broad term used in Section 51, and it covers all claimants. It's not limited to just injured workers. There's no understanding in the division that it just applies to injured workers. Anybody who can file a claim in the Division of Workers' Compensation is a claimant. That's the PIP carrier, the deceased spouse. I've said this before, so I won't repeat it. But I'll pose a question to the court. If a medical provider isn't a claimant, what is it? There's nothing carved out in this legislation that creates a separate category for medical providers. They're claimants under the Division of Workers' Compensation, in the Division of Workers' Compensation, and under the provisions of the Act. So I don't think that can be reasonably disputed by anybody. I do want to mention Oldfield. I don't think it means what counsel thinks it means. Oldfield was a decision about when an injured worker can file his or her claim. It didn't apply to when a medical provider can file a claim against an employer. the language the counsel is relying on is in dicta by the court, talking about the hypothetical situation of how would a worker know this, how would a worker know that. I'll direct the court's attention to page 65 where the dicta starts. There's a long discussion by the court on a hypothetical basis about when certain claims could arise. I do like one sentence from Oldfield, which I think is probably helpful for purposes of some of the things we've discussed here. This court said, in Oldfield, we are of the opinion that the furnishing of medical treatment is in the nature of compensation. It's pretty clear that claimants who are seeking reimbursement or additional payment of medical providers are seeking compensation in the Division of Workers' Compensation.
You like that, but you don't like the sentence that says the employer is liable to suit by the physician for a period of 6 years from the date of service or disbursement. That one you don't like.
I don't particularly have any feelings about it. It's just not what the holding of the court was. The holding of the court was a dismissal of an award of benefits to an injured worker because of the timetables involved.
We've said in some cases, you know, everyone has to respect our dicta. We don't say things for nothing.
I understand that, and I do respect the court's dicta. Okay. I just don't think it's applicable in this particular case.
Okay.
The other things that I really wanted to briefly mention, Justice DelVecchio, you asked about whether the division can determine, is the sole determiner of compensability. It's not. It has primary jurisdiction, but it's not exclusive. The Superior Court can make that decision. Justice Solomon, you talked about the nature of these claims. By and large, most of these claims, these medical provider claims, not just the five here, but largely, I believe the number is close to 90% of the claims are medical providers asking for more money. They've been compensated, they just want more. The thing that I wanted to close with is, and this has been alluded to, requiring medical providers to adhere to the same rules, timetables, procedures, is not an unreasonable request. It makes absolute sense that the medical providers have to play by and adhere to the same rules as PIP carriers, as dependent spouses, and as the injured workers themselves. We have to remember that the Workers' Compensation Act is a carefully crafted scheme that's supposed to benefit the injured workers. We can't lose sight of the fact that the injured workers should be paramount to this, and letting medical providers have different rules, have extended periods of time that may impose upon those injured workers' rights, either in getting their cases heard or settled, or having to bring an injured worker back to court so that the medical provider can somehow try to prove a claim 6 years later, is contrary to the beneficent social legislation that the Workers' Compensation Act is supposed to be.
Thank you. And thank you to all counsel for the very fine arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. The court's going to take a brief